Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another amazing episode of Let's Weekend. I am, of course, your host of the most, Brandon Perkins, and joining me tonight is Filippo D'Onofrio and Chris Sologi. Kind of a small house tonight, partly because, well, other than one big thing, this week was kind of a slow week, and also because I kind of zonked out after 8:30, so we ended up recording this a little later than we're supposed to.
Yeah, shit happens.
Yeah, but anyway, good thing is we managed to save it. So, obviously, we're going to talk a little bit about that one big thing. Of course, we're also going to be talking about the celebrity death that happened, a rather terrible thing that happened to the world of music. We got some tech news and, of course, some media news. And yet another one of our hypocritical far-right Congress people was discovered to have been a fucking hypocrite, and now he's resigned. But you'll find about all that shit later on. And yet another exciting episode of Let's Weekend. So, to get us started properly, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So, this week has been audiobooks. I finished Arcanum Unbounded by Brandon Sanderson. That Stormlight novella at the end was great. So, that makes me even more, you know, excited for next month when the full, you know, Oathbreaker comes out. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to that book. Apart from that, I've been playing some Forzas. Like, most of them.
Yeah. Just all the Forzas?
Yeah. Like, played a bit of Forza 6. Played Forza Horizon the original, which is, for as simple as that game is, it's actually pretty damn fun. I know it got better with Horizon 2 and 3, but, you know, the first one still was pretty solid in its own right. And I got Forza 7, which I was playing right up till the beginning of the show here. So, yeah, I'll probably talk a lot more about Forza 7 in detail on the show tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I can say that it is both the best and the worst the series has been. So,
and I have a feeling the paywall shit probably has to do with it.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of that. And, yeah. It's the actual real money stuff hasn't been implemented into it yet, so there's that. So all of the prize crates and stuff is all you buy it with in-game currency. Yeah, but they did some stupid things that basically make it so that raising the difficulty to challenge yourself is completely irrelevant. So, yeah. We'll discuss that and the state of the rest of the gaming industry tomorrow. So that's pretty much it for me. How about you, Chris?
All right, Chris, what about you?
So I've been watching Mythbusters. Got a hold of some of the early stuff. And been watching it, and it's still really good. It's interesting sort of looking back at some of that early stuff and seeing how different it is from the last, like, 5-10 years, where they have especially a lot of, like, experts, and they have the folklorist there sort of to tell a lot of the story stuff.
Yeah.
And sort of background on whatever myth they're looking at. And I guess at some point they figured out they could save some money by not having these people and just having the actual hosts just do it for us.
Yep.
Which is pretty good. But yeah, there's just some really fun myths they do early on, especially when it's like the chicken gun. Which is great because they didn't even bother checking whether the windshield they were using is rated for bird strikes.
Whoops.
and things like that, but yeah. The one where they had the dead pigs in the car is one of the best, especially being able to just see these other people sort of have to get in there and clean it out. And being happy that you never have to do that.
Yep.
But yeah, there's just some really good stuff there. And this is before the B team is really there.
Yeah.
Carrie's in one of the early episodes when they try to do the getting stuck on the airplane toilet. But that's like the only sign you have of any of those people, at least so far.
Well, she was at the Jado car in the desert, but she was never on camera, so it doesn't really count.
Yeah, because I think she was like an actual intern there for a bit before getting hired on for the show. And yeah, that's been fun to watch. And it kind of brings to light that Discovery kind of really fucked up and did not really properly monetize the show and put out like DVDs and Blu-rays of each season. Because I think they would have done a really big... made a lot of money with that.
Yeah, well, they kind of put out like they put out like volumes, and then were just like a couple of episodes on each DVD, and it wasn't really
that. Yeah, no, I never really liked those like best of sort of thing. It's like no, I'd like all the episodes. Just give me all the episodes for season one, season two, season three. Like I remember looking at like Amazon reviews for those things, and they're like. It's got, like, all but, like, three episodes from this season, so it's kind of that, but it's like, what are these people doing putting this together like this? You can tell that they don't really do that for much of their shows.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's something they really should do, even at this point,
Well, if they can. You can get them pretty much all on iTunes, so that's...
Yeah, I'd rather have, like, Blu-ray and DVD sets or something like that. And also a lot of the guitar music, like the twangy guitars.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God.
That's like so early 2000s.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I like how they call all the rednecks, good old boys. Whenever they're doing stuff like that. It's like, yeah, that probably wouldn't be done today. But yeah, as for game stuff, it's been kind of sporadic stuff. SteamWorld Dig 2, it's been one of the ones I've been playing more and more. Yeah, just pushing further down into the main mine. I've explored some of the side stuff. But yeah, right now there's one enemy that's pissing me off. It's this bird that... has better awareness of where you're at, so it'll just come running straight for you. Its beak is spiked, so if you're trying to hide above it, it'll jump up and try to break blocks under you and try to knock you down, as well as the same if you're got like a wall between you. So it's just a huge asshole bird. And it's the thing that's pissing me off a lot, just not really having great ways to avoid it or take it down quickly. I do have like the bomb gun, but that only holds a few charges. So if I have a bunch of them to go through, they can prove to be very annoying. But yeah, been playing more Metroid: Samus Returns. I think I still have like one or two more upgrades. I think. To go because there are these certain paths I can't get through because there are these I don't know really how to describe it but some sort of obstacle that none of my current things do take care of. But yeah, that's been fun to keep playing. Still have problems with my 3DS the L button, but other than that, that game's been pretty good. And just been doing some more YouTube stuff. The freeloading game I played this week was Pinball FX 3, which the video was took a little bit longer to make because I kept getting crash bugs right as I was starting it, which is not fun at all when it's something I can keep replicating. I put up a video alongside the regular one. To send over to Zen Studios on their Twitter. Basically, I mentioned how my favorites was too full for the game to actually display all of them at once, and so I would start the game, go to that, then hit like R1 to go to the next section, and it would crash right there. It did that pretty much consistently. I could get around it by taking a couple out, but that defeats the point of having the favorite section with all my stuff in it. But yeah, that was not fun. But the game itself is still really fun. Still need to play more of it just because I have so many tables and not that much time to dig into each one to a great degree. But yeah, looking forward to playing more of that. The anniversary I celebrated was Dark Souls' 6th anniversary. Sort of the one that kind of put that whole series on the map for the mainstream, in a sense, because it hit all three platforms, PS3, Xbox 360, and PC. And I was playing some of that. I was not very far into it, like 4 or 5 hours. And mainly contended with a dragon on a bridge that as soon as you sort of walked into the main part of the bridge, he would just spew fire all across it and kill everything that was on there. Which required me to kind of do it once just to get all the other enemies off my out of my way and go hide again and have to kind of run off to the side because there are these little kind of like balconies hanging off the edges that you could hang out at and not get too much trouble. But then I hung out there long enough that the dragon just decided to come down to the bridge and hang out and just cause more shit. Eventually, I managed to get past it and found a bonfire on the other side so I could save there and avoid the dragon completely, which was nice to see. And along the way, I died a bunch during the video, as is typical for a Souls game. So yeah, that was pretty fun to do. And I'm working on a big feature for the site, hopefully going up, I think, on s Friday, right around there. Still putting together a lot of logistical stuff, getting a list of everything I want to put in it, and working on all the writing for that. Not sure the format it's going to go up in because it's going to probably too big for just a normal article, but we'll see how that goes. But yeah, keep an eye out sometime next weekend for that. And yeah, that's been pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
Yeah, well, when not completely zonked out. So first things first, I finally got my copy of Sakura Wars: So Long, My Love in the mail this week.
Nice.
So I've been playing that for the last couple days, as well as Cuphead, and getting close to finish that. So I'll probably talk a bit more about Sakura Wars tomorrow, but basically, Sakura Wars is one of those really hard to define genre bending games that honestly only Japan could probably make. It's basically a well, it, by itself, it's basically a visual novel slash dating sim that is also heavily involved in a strategy RPG. Basically, the game basically begins sort of where the other Sakura War games end. So it starts in Japan, where you're playing the nephew of the guy who's the main hero in the original Sakura Wars, and he gets sent off to go work in New York. So the game actually take this particular game takes place in New York, and I think circa 1920 something. I can't remember. And so what you're doing is you're it, okay. So just a little bit about the Sakura Wars universe. The way that Secure Wars universe is that it's like an alternate timeline that at some point during the 1910s and like the Taisho era, you know, those of you who don't know what the Taisho era is, it's the era between Emperor Meiji and between the death of Emperor Meiji and the ascension of Emperor Showa, aka Hirohito. And at some point during then, some weird cosmological thing happens and some demons start crawling out of the netherworld. And the thing is that these demons can only be defeated through, well, positive energies, basically. And so when they come in existence and you have to fight them, well, good guys climb into these steam-powered mech suits. And when they're not, they try to keep a positive energy about by basically, well, in the original Japanese game, by doing something that's basically akin to the Takurazaka review. Do you know what the Takurazaka review is?
No. Can't say I
did. It's this all-girl... it's a real thing in Japan. It's basically an all-girl variety show.
Okay.
Usually has... it's all female cast, and they usually put on plays and performances. These days, usually based on anime, but back then, they did it on just a bunch of stuff. And so, that's sort of how the balance in the original games is. Now, in So Long, My Love, you're sent off to New York, where the group that you're talking to, the group in Japan is called the Flower Division. The one in... the U.S. is called the Star Division, and it's basically run in a theater called the Little Lips Theater, which, again, has an all-female cast on Broadway. And basically, the way the game works is, during a good chunk of the time, you're talking with the various cast members, trying to get in their good graces, in some case, dating them, or trying to date them. Sometimes you're doing menial tasks, the menial task part usually involves like quick time events, so like button presses and controllers. And then when actual enemies come along, there's the big strategy RPG element, which requires it's actually not easy. It requires some serious planning and strategy on your part. And there's actually two modes to that. There's the standard mode, where you have to go around and fight them. And all the enemies go freeform. So you're sort of like you're given like a set amount of fuel per turn that you can use to go to a certain area. And then, of course, you got your standard attack and your super attack, all that stuff. But then when the really big enemies show up, you go into flight mode, and suddenly... you're able to travel in three dimensions. So up, down, left, right, forward, back. And the way that they do combat in the air mode is particularly spectacular because it's very cinematic, and it involves like trying to track down weak points for enemies, and it's really cool. And then there's, like, the cast that you actually interact with. So, like, the actual members of the star of, the star division is made up of, like, okay, so there's the main janitor chick who's, like, this girl from Texas, like a cowgirl, who also, it turns out, is a serious weeaboo and wants to be a samurai.
Okay.
Let's see. There's, this sort of androgynous Japanese woman, the only other Japanese in the team, who is sort of aloof and isn't really sure what to make of you at first. And then there's the black woman, who is a attorney, and like her whole attacks and stuff, like her whole call-outs and everything are based around justice, and you are guilty, let's start the trial, all that stuff. She hates your guts the moment she sees you. So she's sort of a heel that you have to deal with at the beginning of the game. I haven't gotten that far yet, but holy crap, it's a lot of fun. And it's hilarious at times, too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that's been one of my primary playing. Of course, Cuphead. I'm working on the Cuphead review right now, and I should have it finished tomorrow night. That game is not easy.
You managed to beat it yet, or?
I'm at the last, I think, the last third.
Okay.
Enough to go ahead and make a good, a quality review.
Right.
But it's hard. It is very difficult. It's a good, satisfying difficult, but you will, you will die a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that, that's the deceptive part about Cuphead, because it's a game that looks so cute and so approachable, and then you play it and it kicks your ass mercilessly.
Oh, yeah. It it completely fucking murders you.
Yeah.
But other than that, of course, I got I found an old acoustic guitar in my grandparents' attic, and I'm getting that sort of tuned up and cleaned up. Hmm. So that's pretty much been my week. Yeah. So has anybody got anything else they want to add before we move on?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, it's then time once again for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And today I got a quick little one for you. So has everybody heard of the country Niger? Not Nigeria, just Niger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's in Africa. It's where the Sahara Desert is.
Yeah.
Okay, so years ago, there was a landmark in Niger called the Lonely Tree of Teneri. It's a desert tree. It's like crooked and it's got like straggly leaves and everything. And for a long time, and for like 300 years, this was like, it was right in the middle of the Sahara Desert. It was literally the only landmark within 250 miles. Everything else was just rocks and sand and crags. You know, and like, you know, so for 300 years, people would go to this. They would use it as sort of like a landmark to navigate the desert. It was pretty much untouched for that time. It was basically, because I mean, honestly, how else could it? Like, it's literally the only tree in 250 miles. That's pretty hard to miss. Until 1973, when a truck driver somehow managed to crash into it.
Oops.
Again, only tree for 250 miles in one of the flattest parts of the world. In the middle of a desert where there was nothing else but rocks and sand and crags. And this one douchebag somehow managed to ram into this fucking tree.
It was probably drunk.
It's possible. This was Niger, after all.
Hmm.
But, you know, that was, again, like up from the 1600s until 1973, people used this tree as a navigation tool. It's not there anymore. Because this one asshole apparently somehow managed to crash into the one tree, again, the only tree within 250 goddamn miles.
Yeah.
Although in hindsight, considering, you kind of have to ask yourself how that didn't happen sooner, because for some weird reason, when there's like a lone landmark like that in the middle of nowhere, it seems to just have a magnetizing effect on idiots.
Hmm.
So, in hindsight, it was kind of just daring the world for somebody to wreck into it. And that has been yet another episode of Brandon's Random Factoid. Yeah. Okay, now, to start the show proper, of course, we have to talk about the asshole of the week. And honestly, there was no other person that it could have been. This week's asshole of the week is Stephen Paddock, the Las Vegas shooter. So, this week there was a big country music festival that was happening in Las Vegas. There was a bunch of people there. I think it was like a crowd of like 3,000 people.
Yeah, something like that.
I want to say it was bigger than that.
It was probably bigger than that.
This is your 22,000 people.
Yeah. And this is, of course, this thing is on, like, right next to the Sunset Strip that this thing was happening. And there was this hotel that was just across the road from it. And in that hotel, up in, I can't remember what floor it was this dude, Stephen Paddock, who, for reasons that nobody has been able to decipher yet, like, why he did it, nobody knows yet. You know, he didn't leave any notes. He wasn't
to any family or friends about it.
No, he wasn't particularly political or socially, you know, connected or anything. He was literally a wealthy real estate mogul. Yeah, retired real estate mogul and professional gambler. Literally had nothing that would point to him, any kind of drastic circumstances that would drive him to do something like that. Nobody knows. All that anybody knows now is that he somehow convinced his then live-in girlfriend to move to go over to the Philippines. And then he got in a big he got into a suite up, and I can't remember what floor it was. He managed to get like 10 or 20 guns in there. And then he took out an automatic rifle, fit it what do they call those stocks? I can't remember what they're called.
Bump stock.
Yeah, bump stock. And he managed to kill about 60 people and injure like 100 or something more.
I think it was about 500.
Yeah.
It was a ridiculous amount of people.
Like, the dude was literally just... There was no... no plan. Yeah, well, obviously he planned the thing. I mean, because they say that he apparently did another stay when Lollapalooza was in town, but he, I guess, just to stake out the joint or whatever. That's what
couldn't
get
a room in the right place that he wanted.
Yeah. So it was definitely planned.
Yeah, he showed up like a week early.
Mm-hmm.
Took his time getting the guns up there.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wasn't any particular targets either. He just fired into the crowd for, I think it was like, what, 5 or 10 minutes?
Something like that.
And he ended up using, I think, like 700 rounds of ammunition or something akin to that. And, like there's, you know, smartphone, iPhone video that people took of when it was happening. Like, it was during a concert and this dude's, and then all of a sudden you can hear in the background. And the thing is, nobody recognized what was happening until, like, after the music stopped. And
yeah, I heard a lot of people saying, oh, they thought some asshole was setting off fireworks or something like that.
Remember, this is Las Vegas.
Yeah.
You know, this is Nevada. Yeah. And, yeah, so in, I think it was like 10 minutes, Stephen Paddock committed the worst mass shooting in modern American history.
And one of the reasons they found him...
Yeah, like the... Go ahead.
One of the reasons they found him so fast, just from shooting all those rounds so fast, it set off the fire alarm.
Yeah, the smoke from the barrel was... Yeah. Yeah, people forget that part. Guns do create a lot of smoke when you fire a lot of rounds. That's why, like, I got some folks in the family who, you know, are Army or former Army, and, you know, one of the things they tell you is, like, one of the things you're trained about in the middle of a firefight is everybody in the, you know, in the squad is basically trained to call out, well, not necessarily call out their shots, but call out how many they fired and where they are, just because if you're in a long firefight, eventually the smoke will become so thick that you can't see. So yeah, this guy managed to set off so many rounds that it set off the fire alarm. And on literally the only comparison people have been able to get to this is like the closest mass shooting in American history that can equal to this is the Wounded Knee Massacre of 1897. But that was like 3 or 4 Union soldiers.
Yeah, you know, this was one guy.
Yeah, this was just one dude with a bunch of guns and a hotel room in Las Vegas.
Yeah, it's sort of a perfect scenario for that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's Las Vegas where there are a lot of these casinos and hotels and such that are just these huge tall buildings.
Yeah, and they're all packed very close together, too.
Yeah.
That's the thing a lot of people don't realize. Las Vegas is not like, you know, New York, where it's like a sprawling cityscape. Las Vegas is actually pretty tightly packed together.
Mm. It's a desert, so they didn't want to spread it out and make people have to be outside too long to get from place to place.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so, as is now the custom in the United States, whenever one of these happens, you all know the cycle. Everybody starts sending out their thoughts and prayers. And then, of course, inevitably the discussion of gun control and gun violence comes out. And then the NRA and their cronies come out and go, no, no, now's not the time to politicize this. And, you know, let them mourn the dead first. Then we can talk about gun control. And as this cycle usually goes, eventually in a couple days, people will forget about it and nothing will be done.
Yeah, because if we waited for there not to be shootings to talk about it, that would never happen.
Yeah.
Because we average at least one mass shooting every day.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that's, pretty much what seems to be happening now. There's some, sort of, like, token discussion about, regulating bump stocks now.
Yeah, that seems like even the NRA is on this as like a, hey, see, we're for regulating guns for gun control.
Yeah.
Because we get rid of this one little thing that doesn't stop
anything
else.
Yeah. And it, you know, and it also showed how particularly callous some of the GOP can be, because they're like, you know, one guy said, you know, if you want to avoid a mass shooting, what you need is to get small. I keep hoping that at some point when one of these, and I hope maybe this is the one that'll finally get people to start doing something, but my faith in our government right now is at its lowest, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see a lot of people, like, shoot it down. It's like, oh, it's any sort of regulation is going to stop it. It's like, it's not about stopping it.
Yeah.
It's about lowering the amount of these things that are happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even then, they could do things like buyback programs.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are probably a lot of people that would be willing to sell their guns, not only because they don't necessarily need, you know, 10, 15, 20 guns, but they could also use that money as well.
Hmm. Yeah. Two things I need to point out. Number one, Nevada has probably the laxest gun laws in that part of the country.
Hmm.
And number two, because I hear this canard a lot, no, Chicago does not have the strictest gun regulation in the United States.
Hmm.
In fact, it's not even towards the top. It did for a very brief time, but
it's a city.
Yeah,
you can bring guns in from anywhere else.
Yeah, the difference, even during the time when it had very strong gun regulation, it was basically an island in a sea of nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the rest of Illinois had gun laws that were much more lax. So, true, the gun laws within Chicago may have been pretty strict, but it was also really easy to get guns from outside of the city into the city.
It doesn't get rid of the ones that are already there.
Yeah.
It's like if you banned all sale of alcohol, it's like you would just go out of town to get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, ask Pat, because he lives in Utah. And, yeah, so just to, because people are probably going to guess what my view on this is, and I'll just say what I said on Facebook. I, of course, am pro-gun. I have guns. I have five of them. I have two hunting rifles I inherited from my dad, from my grandfather. I have a 9mm revolver. I have a Glock. And I have a pump-action shotgun that my dad bought for me and him. He has one, too. He got a pair, one for me, more for him. I know these guns. I have used these guns. I know the danger and responsibility that comes with these guns. Owning a gun is a very serious responsibility, it can, even a grave one. I know the potential dangers a gun has. I also know that there are far too many people within the United States who treat gun ownership far too flippantly, who simply do not understand or simply refuse to understand the serious responsibility that comes with owning one. So what I advocate is that if any person wants to gain a license to operate a firearm, amongst, you know, having the background check, you should also have a psychiatric course just to find out if you have PTSD or paranoid schizophrenia, anything that would increase the risk of you using a firearm to harm yourself or someone else. And every person should be required to take a 3-day course on gun training and safety.
Yeah.
So that you will be able to know the ins and outs of a gun, the risks of a gun, the types of guns, and what gun, and you know how, you know, the way guns operate. And then after all that's over, just like you have to get take a written test to get a driver's license, you should then be required to take a written test to get a gun license. And after that, if you somehow manage to injure yourself or someone else, or if God forbid kill someone, and you say it was an accident, and it was one of the things that was covered in the course, you don't have an excuse.
No.
So that's basically my look. As a person who is a socialist and a Marxist, I believe that an armed working class is the bedrock of a democracy. But I also know that, you know, guns are instruments of death. That is what they're basically designed to be. And it's a serious responsibility to own one.
Yeah.
So that's...
And it's not like the Second Amendment would be violated by gun control.
No, it actually would not at all. But
Second Amendment isn't really about any sort of form of gun control.
No.
It's about an uprising of a foreign government here.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. But, of course, the heroes of the week, of course, will tire in with the assholes, the many people that help save friends, family, strangers, and loved ones. In Las Vegas. And there was a lot of them, a lot of stories. And the carnage was awful. I mean, there were people there having to pile injured into pickup trucks because there were so many of them. People who worked for hours on end late at night in hospitals without sleep. And of course, people in general who just did what they could to make sure that everybody, that as many people could get out as they could. And then, of course, there was that one dude who was drinking a beer and flipping off the gunman. You've probably seen that picture by now. But so again, nobody knows why this dude did it. I'm going to be honest, the more I read about this guy, the more I start to... you know who he really starts to remind me of? You guys ever heard of Charles Whitman? Charles Whitman was the guy in the 60s who climbed the clock tower at the University of Texas and shot a bunch of people with a sniper rifle. He was... he killed, like, I think it was like 15 people. and injured like a dozen others. And he apparently had some serious mental issues that he was perfectly aware of. He knew he had some serious problems, but the problem was is that the psychiatric and medical science at the time just hadn't advanced to the point that they could correctly identify it. And so one of the things he requested in his little note that he left before he went on a spree was, if I'm killed, which he was killed by the cops, have an autopsy done on me. And when they did an autopsy done on him, they found a brain tumor about the size of a pecan near the base of his skull. So maybe that's what happened here. I don't know.
Never know.
No, well... Well, all right, so moving into the show proper, and before we do the first one, let's go ahead, because we're talking about Las Vegas, let's do the second one. So like I said, the band was playing as the shooting was happening, and of course they had the guitarist in that particular group, and apparently the guitarist survived, of course, and he has said that... after having been at the festival, it basically changed his mind on gun control.
Yeah, he had a series of tweets there where he kind of explained himself.
Yeah, let's take a look here. His name's, let's see, what's his name? Caleb Keeter, I think that's his name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is what he says. I've been a proponent of the Second Amendment my entire life. Until the events of last night, I cannot express how wrong I was. We actually have members of our crew with CHL licenses and legal firearms on the bus. They were useless. We couldn't touch them for fear police might think that we were part of the massacre and shoot us. A small group, or one man, at least. Well, again, at this point, we didn't know it was just the Stephen Paddock.
Yeah, it's like the morning after.
Yeah, laid waste to a city with dedicated, fearless police officers desperately trying to help because of access to an insane amount of firepower. Writing my parents and the love of my life a goodbye last night in a living will because I felt like I wasn't going to live through the night was enough for me to realize that this is completely and totally out of hand. These rounds were powerful enough that my crew guys just standing and close proximity of a victim shot by this fucking coward received shrapnel wounds. We need gun control right now. My biggest regret is that I stubbornly didn't realize it until my brothers on the road and myself were threatened by it. We are unbelievably fortunate to not be among the numbers of victims killed or seriously wounded by this maniac.
Yeah. It doesn't get much more clear than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he hits the nail on the head that sort of the average citizen with guns would not have had any effect on helping in that situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the record, don't look at the comments underneath it because it's Twitter.
Yeah.
It's accessible. But, yeah, so unfortunately he had to actually have it directly affect him before he was willing to consider the concept, so... But, hey, he came around eventually, so...
Yeah, better late than never.
It seems like this is happening for a lot of people in the country music scene.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good that it's actually happening at some point.
Yeah. Alright, so... Of course, we have to talk at first. Tom Petty passed away this week at the age of 66 from cardiac arrest. You want to talk about a dude who fucking had just, like, one of the coolest careers in popular music. Tom Petty, like, literally got his big break in the late 70s, you know, and he managed to become a big deal in the early 80s. Then he made, like, a big comeback in the late 80s when he embraced MTV, and he took on the whole Mad Hatter persona, and all of a sudden, you know, he's a big deal again. And then he and his band end up having the biggest hit of their careers with Free Falling, and I think it was 1990,
mm-hmm.
1991, somewhere around then.
Yeah.
And he and the Heartbreakers managed to be a pretty very managed to stay a very big presence in popular music throughout the 90s and into the 2000s. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like the one of his last solo albums was like it was like a top five album. Mm-hmm. So, holy crap! You want to talk about just a guy who, I mean, let's think about this. So So first and foremost, he was a great songwriter, a great musician. I don't think he was the best singer in the world.
No, not really.
But somehow he made it work. Hmm. And, oh yeah, and also there was that thing he did where he was in the Traveling Wilburys.
Yeah.
You know, like the greatest supergroup that ever did, that was ever created. For those who don't know, Traveling Wilburys, it was a supergroup made up of Tom Petty, George Harrison, Bob Dylan, Roy Orbison, and what's his name from ELO? Yeah, I'm completely blanking.
Gary Lynn.
Yeah, Gary Lynn. And they put out an album, and it was awesome. Mm. But God, man, that dude was amazing. He was a legend, and it's a credit to his talent that he was able to remain relevant the way he did, you know, up to this point.
Yeah.
And this was completely unexpected. Like, obviously, I mean, the man was 66, and when you get to that age, eventually you're going to have some stuff happen. Yeah. I mean, that's just human biology. But it came out of completely nowhere. All everyone knows is he had some massive cardiac episode. They had to put him on life support. He ended up getting prematurely declared dead once. Hmm. And then they had to bring it back in and said, no, he isn't dead yet, but it's only a matter of time. And then he actually died, and then the media had the ignoble responsibility of having to retract and then put back a death announcement for a celebrity. Yeah. Fuck, man. Well,
yeah, he had some good acting roles, too. He was in the King of the Hill for a long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which now, Luann and Lucky are now passed away.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. He was Lucky, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I forgot about that. R.I.P. Tom Petty, your music will live on. And if you haven't checked out Tom Petty before, if you're only somewhat aware of his music, give it a shot. It's amazing stuff. The dude was actually pretty, his output was pretty diverse, and,
Yeah, he had some of the most interesting music videos of that era.
Yeah, like I said.
Late 80s, early 90s.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, that whole, Mad Hatter persona he took on.
Yeah.
That Mad Hatter, that image of him in the Mad Hatter was so, influential that it's basically sort of affected how people see the Mad Hatter ever since then. The Mad Hatter character on Batman the Animated Series, directly based on Tom Petty's image as that character. So, all right. So, moving on from there, here's something that's really going to shock you. You know those douchebags who run Breitbart, you know, Steve Bannon, also Milo Yiannopoulos. Yeah, apparently they've actually courted Nazis and Nazi ideals trying to get them into the mainstream alt-right.
Hmm.
How shocking.
Yeah, I would never be able to believe that. Nope, just couldn't possibly happen.
Yeah, so BuzzFeed managed to get a hold of some a shit ton of emails between Milo and Bannon and other people, and some of this is really on the one hand, it's hilarious and also depressingly cynical. Because, like, they're literally trying to manipulate the discourse here. Understand, none of this is by accident. And when you read this, you discover this was all very carefully planned. It made very clear that, you know, both Milo and Bannon are both super amoral shitbags, and also, honestly, I don't really know if they actually have any ideas. Like, for Bannon, I can at least say that, yes, he's a hyper-ultra-nationalist and also super racist, but Milo, I don't think Milo has any ideas.
Ideals? No, I think he's just a scumbag. Just
the
purest form.
Well, I mean, you got to remember about Milo is that his image is very carefully cultivated. Because when he started out, he was a very middle of the road English conservative. And then, you know, he created his whole flamboyant persona, and the thing is, he thinks that he can say all this awful shit because, for one, he's of Jewish ancestry, and also he's Catholic.
I guess he also has recently married a black man, so he can't possibly be racist. and I think he also put a statement, because part of this whole thing was a video with him and Richard Spencer in like a karaoke bar. And they were doing, everybody but Milo was like doing Nazi salutes, and he said he has like extreme myopia. So he could not see them. It's like bullshit.
If you watch the whole video, it's pretty clear that no, he could see it happening. Milo, he was singing God Bless America at the karaoke bar. And
there's lots of names attached to this that, if you follow Gamergate, lots of those names. Like, there should be no confusion anymore that Gamergate was sort of a gathering grounds to get more people into the alt-right.
They've got this whole... these graphs and stuff here where they show you the link between the big five at Breitbart is the co-founder and CEO Larry Solov, of course Bannon, who's co-founder and executive chairman. There's Alex Marlow, who's their editor-in-chief, of course Milo, who was their former tech editor, and Alan Bakari, who was, you know, well, for one thing, he was Milo's ghostwriter, and he was also a reporter. Steve Bannon actually was in contact with a guy named James Pinkerton, who was a former Reagan and Bush staffer. The first Bush, not W, the first one. And Milo was actively contacting people like Andrew Arnheimer, a.k.a. Weave, from the Daily Stormer, Curtis Yarvin, neo-reactionary writer, famously known as Mencius Moldbug, a dude from American Renaissance named Devin Saussure, goes under the alias Henry Wolf, and of course, because he's going to be in there, Theodore Beale, a.k.a. Fox Day.
I guess people at Breitbart would actually send drafts of their articles over to these sorts of alt-right Nazi people, sort of ideas and all that sort of stuff, as well as just people you would not have expected to be interested in this stuff, exchanging emails and sending ideas and such to Milo and all that. There's like one guy that worked at Broadly, which is Vice's women's site, like women's empowerment site, which is like, oh, that guy probably should not have been there.
Nope.
And these people, having all this stuff come out, have basically gone into victim mode on their Twitter. Either they shut themselves down or started talking about how they're being bullied. It's like, no, you don't get to pull that.
No.
Nope.
you're not the victim here.
No.
Yeah, and of course, the big one that you need to know about is, of course, the sugar daddy. Mm. Or sugar daddies. Specifically, the Mercer family. Specifically, Rebecca Mercer, who is the director of the Mercer Family Foundation, which is the foundation that gets the Mercer funds into not just Breitbart, but a lot of these far-right and alt-right groups and think tanks all over the U.S. So, you know, American Vanguard, V-Dare, the Occidental Observer, all these, the Barnes Review, all those groups. They've actually got emails between Rebecca Mercer and, you know, Bannon, Milo, and Charlie Nash, who was one of the reporters at Breitbart, specifically to create the, I'm trying to see what that is, Store Clinton Gang.
There was a good tweet by Zoe Quinn, one of the big targets for Gamergate.
Yeah.
Where she's like reacting to this and is like, I dumped a guy and he ended up creating a new chapter in white supremacy.
Yep.
Like realizing how...
Everybody has to understand, that's literally, Zoe Quinn is pretty much ground zero for the whole Gamergate thing starting.
It was her ex-boyfriend, so pissed about getting dumped.
Yeah.
Literally just gave as much information to people on 4chan.
Yeah.
To coordinate some harassment campaign that grew into Gamergate.
Yeah. And again, we link this in the show notes. Read this article because it's not – none of this is
very detailed.
Yes, it's fairly detailed. None of this is a coincidence. They got evidence to back up every piece of it.
I know it says BuzzFeed, but this is BuzzFeed doing actual journalism, and they do that. It's not just, you know, top 10 lists of cat pictures.
Yeah. And, you know, and this doesn't just implicate the Mercers and Bannon. It also... implicates Dan Fluette, who's the co-producer for Glittering Steel. And then, of course, there's not just Milo himself, but the whole sort of team of sycophants he managed to surround himself with. So, Bach Carl, Baked Alaska, Ben Q, Tom Cicada, Hunter Swagger, Mike Mahoney. It's...
Oh, yeah, if you were wondering about Milo's ties to the Nazis, one of his accounts that he shared with Alan Bukhari, his ghostwriter, had a password that began with the word Kristall, as in Kristallnacht.
Yeah, and we don't mean like it's like – some will be thinking, well, maybe he's talking about Kristall, the wine. No, it's Kristall. Which is literally the first half of Kristallnacht, the night of broken glass, the infamous anti-Jewish pogrom that erupted in Nazi Germany and is sort of considered the precursor to the Holocaust. Mm. So, no, it's not...
Yeah, another password called Long Knives 1290.
Which is about the night of the Long Knives, which is when... Hitler had all the Strasserites and the quote-unquote left wing of the Nazi Party, including Ernst Röhm, the head of the SA, assassinated.
Hmm.
So,
and also he's worn Nazi stars.
Oh, yeah, there's also that.
Yeah.
No, he's not a Nazi. He just likes the look of their logos and all that.
Yeah, and now here's the thing. They would get in contact with, people who are neo-reactionaries who – and the thing is, neo-reactionaries are pretty despicable human beings, but they're not particularly – not all of them are particularly fond of Nazis. For example, Curtis Yarvin, there's an email exchange he has with Milo. He says, pro tip on handling the endless tide of 1488 scum. Do I need to explain what 1488 is?
No, I don't think so.
Just for it is. 1488 relates to the 14 words. 8 is H. H is the 8th letter of the alphabet, so it's HH, Heil Hitler. All right, so he says, deal with them the way some perfectly tailored high communist New York Times reporter handles a herd of greasy anarchist hippies. Patronizing contempt. Your heart is in the right place, young lady. Now go get a shower and shave those pits. The liberal doesn't purge the communist because he hates communism. He purges the communist because the communist is a public embarrassment to him. It's not that he sees enemies to the left, just that he sees losers to the left and losers rub off. Wow. that's some... I'm like, what? That's some serious ideology you got there, partner. Mm-hmm. Wow. and, you know, Milo goes, you know, he responds, thanks regarding 1488. I have been struggling with this. I need to stay, if not clean, then clean enough. See, here's the thing. They know who they're courting, and they don't really care much for them to begin with, apparently. in fact, you'll find conversations between Bannon and Milo where, you know, where they're thinking about getting some... Okay, so here's, like, one of the things... On Milo, you know, Milo has his podcast, right? And the thing is, Milo has had a bunch of awful, awful people be guests on his podcast, but almost none of them have been like the really big, like skinhead Heil Hitler types. And that's by design because Bannon's basically told him, look, dude, some of these guys are legit racist. We need to stay away from them. Because apparently some of these other assholes aren't legit racist. I don't. Like I said, it's all very much very cynical, very planned by design. It is absolutely astonishing how
I'd use the word vile, but
yeah, it's vile. It's absolutely sickening. And I'm hoping as more information from this stuff comes out, it'll ultimately be the death knell to this whole awful moment in American history. And the good thing is, and I can say this because I've basically watched it happen, the alt-right is a fad. And even on places like 4chan, it's going out of style. So, like, even places like where you would normally expect to see all that shit, it's not showing up anymore. In fact, you'll actively see people saying, nah, this stuff is stupid. Grow up. So they failed, ultimately, but, you know, they aren't ready to go out just yet. So, yeah.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. I think Charlottesville was the catalyst was ultimately the death knell for this whole movement.
Yeah. Well, guess who's back in Charlottesville?
Oh, by the way, yeah, I forgot to mention that. Yeah, Richard Spencer and his cronies are in Charlottesville again tonight. Having another tiki torch rally. Guess what, though? Only about 30 people showed up this time. So,
yeah, I'm sure that went really well.
Yeah, for those of you who don't remember, the last one that they did, that was the precursor to all the whole shit that went down in Charlottesville. That one had like hundreds of people in its group. Yeah, just about 30, and he's calling it a success. Yeah, this shit's done. All right, so moving on, in other political news, Representative Tim Murphy, who is a staunch, hardcore right-wing Christian conservative, hardcore anti-abortion, anti-gay, you know, a Roy Moore type individual, has a 0% rating from the Human Rights Campaign, has a 100% rating from the Family Research Council. Well, not only did we find out that he was having an affair, which is bad enough, we also found out that when he found out there was a love child involved, he was basically pressuring his mistress to get an abortion.
Yeah, because that's not hypocritical at all.
Yeah.
It's only good when it happens to me.
Yeah. Yeah, so the guy who's all, you know, protect the lives of children, you know, abortion is murder, pro-life, except for the, you know, this kid I accidentally goofed inside my mistress, so now we gotta scoop her clean. Yeah.
Yeah, because it'd be embarrassing if that came out.
Yeah, but it did come out, and guess what? He resigned! Well, he's resigned effectively the 21st, so let's see. In about 2 weeks, yeah.
Still enough time to vote on the next thing.
Yeah, I guess, and believe me, that's not a coincidence. He specifically wants to stick around long enough to do just a little bit more damage before he has to go off into the good night. So, yeah. Speaking of which, there was a bill recently that passed the House. It's a 20-week abortion bill. So, has anyone ever heard the phrase partial birth abortion before?
Not really.
Okay, I'm guessing this isn't a thing, like a big deal in Canada. But, so, there's a medical procedure which its technical term is intact dilation and extraction. It's an emergency form of abortion that happens when a child is born with an extreme defect that, if tried to birth through the natural process, it would kill the mother, either through, like maybe the head is far too large and that it would basically tear her to shreds, or it would cause excessive bleeding or blood clotting. Maybe it's got something in it that's causing, you know, an awful chemical reaction that if she gives birth to the baby, it will kill her. And so usually at this extreme moment, there is an emergency procedure done where they basically extract the still forming child that isn't completely born yet, but it's far enough into the process that it looks more like a baby. It would be, in many cases, it's not quite to the point of where it would be if it was a miscarriage, but it's pretty close. And it's not an easy thing to discuss. It's not a easy topic to talk about because it's an extreme situation. This isn't something that a woman goes to do, you know, out of demand or because they just don't want to have the kid anymore. It's because, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's because it happens from a wanted child. You know, they had planned on having the child. They wanted to keep this child, but because of some issue, giving birth or keeping this child any longer would kill the mother. And as you can probably guess, some members of the GOP decided to take this and politicize it and get it involved in the mainstream abortion debate.
Because of course they would.
And, I know that up in Canada you guys have your pro-life movement too. But
I don't think they're as extreme as they are down there.
I think it might partly be because you guys don't have, I'm not going to say, because I've never been to Canada. I'm not going to try to make any guesses or anything, but yeah. So, I mean, they tell lies about like how these women just decide, I don't want this kid anymore. Get him out of me. And then, you know, they'll tell stories of how the kid's like still squirming and then they have to put scissors into the back of the neck to kill it and all this awful shit. And like, for the record, most of the time when these procedures happen, they try to put the child into an incubator afterwards, so at least it has a chance at surviving. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, most of the time it just can't survive outside the mother. Again, this is an extreme situation that unfortunately a lot of women find themselves in through no fault of their own. And the fact that there are people who try to politicize it is just vile, frankly.
Yeah, and the title of the act is the Pain Capable Unborn Child Act, because they try to claim that scientists have proven that they can, you know, feel pain at 20 weeks, when I don't think that's been true.
Well, even if that was the case, that's not really the issue here, because again, this isn't because, you know, this isn't because the child is unwanted. Most of the time, it's because it's a child that was planned for.
Yeah.
And because of some serious defects or some sort of necrosis or some other medical condition, if the child is given birth to naturally, it would kill the mother.
Yeah, which they supposedly have exceptions for that, which then sort of puts the point, why is there this bill?
Yeah. Well, there, I can tell
you
why.
They generally don't do it any other reason.
Yeah, well, I can tell you why there's exceptions and why they do the bill anyways, because they have to appeal to their base, and their base are a bunch of women-hating fucking troglodytes, that's why.
Yeah.
So it just seems like a bill that's going to try to, you know, put restrictions on this stuff.
Yeah.
While still allowing the parts that were generally fine with before.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Which I guess the ACLU and Planned Parenthood are going to be fighting against this.
I would hope so. In fact, I actually don't think Planned Parenthood actually offers this particular procedure to begin with. They do give regular abortions, but nothing in this extreme situation. They usually end up referring the mother to gynecologists and specialists who have experience in doing this type of procedure. But to just put a little bit of salt on the bullshit, at the same time, Trump has actually overturned the Obama rule that mandated insurance plans include birth control. Because of course he did.
And so now companies can back out of this on religious or moral obligations.
Yeah.
Setting America back 50 years.
Of course. God damn it, Robert Mueller. Hurry up. Get us the info so we can get this man. Because I keep thinking, you know, to myself, I keep telling, there was that one article in the New York Times to the guy who talked to some guy in the intelligence community who, when asked about this situation, he said he's going to die in jail. And that's what I keep telling myself, that eventually Mueller is going to get what he needs, and then all of this has come out, and that fucking orange marmalade Mussolini is going to spend the rest of his life in a cell. But
we can hope.
Yeah, we can hope. Anyway, all right, now off to less serious stuff. Basically this week, Google managed to invent the babblefish.
Yeah, in a way.
So explain this one. Babblefish is a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So it's basically, a fish that you talk into, and then it translates what you talked into to the other person. So among Google's, many announcements that they did this week, you know, phones and speakers and all that kind of fun stuff.
Yeah.
They announced a pair of earbuds that were, basically Bluetooth earbuds. They have Google Assistant, and they paired to a Google Pixel 2 phone. You can talk into it and choose the language that you want it to translate to, and in real time, you'll get translations. A lot of people are making a big deal of this because it's... you know, a good demonstration of the technology.
Yeah.
But this isn't something that is actually too new, because Google Translate already does this.
Yeah, and we already know how good a job it does.
Actually, it does a really good job.
Yeah, of most things.
Yeah.
I want to say they bought a company that has, visual tech for this stuff, so you can point the camera at, a sign, and it'll tell you what it says.
Yeah, we got that.
Yeah, I've got that app on my phone.
Yeah, it was called Lens or something
like that. The reason I say this is, if you try to use Google Translate to translate Japanese, some of the Asian languages, it's not quite up to snuff yet.
Yeah. Well, I've heard from somebody who went to Japan last year and used Google Translate that it worked very well for her.
Yeah. So, but I'm also sure she had to use some a little bit of discretion as well, because, well, you know what, just if anybody out there who's ever had to translate Japanese with Google Translate, you know what I'm talking about.
If you try to do a
Wikipedia article on the Japanese Wikipedia and translate it, it comes out kind of garbled.
Yeah, just keep your statements simple, and you'll be able to be understood pretty well. And that's pretty much what you need to do. It's not a replacement for actually knowing the language, but if you're there visiting the country, it'll get you by.
Yeah, it also helps that quite a lot of a lot of Japanese people actually do speak a good amount of English. So
yeah,
like they have a whole club dedicated to it in high schools. So
yeah,
but we're getting that much closer to eventually coming across universal.
Yeah, Skype also does this too, by the way.
Yeah, Skype does. But it's also Skype.
Yeah.
So. All right, next up, one of the old relics of the old internet is finally coming to an end. On December 15th, AIM will officially be discontinued.
Crap. Well, now I got to find something else.
Yeah. I actually didn't use AIM that much. I used ICQ, but...
I used ICQ myself, and then, everybody's... was on AIM, so I had to get an account there.
Yeah. But I guess at this point in time now, AIM's just kind of obsolete.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because you can just text your friends or...
Yeah, pretty much. That's sort of... Because that's basically what AIM's purpose was.
Except you could have signatures and fucking shitty text and colors and all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
As well as all the spam.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, porn spam.
Yeah. Lots of it. Oh, boy.
Yeah. And this is all happening because of the, I think it's the Verizon acquisition, so.
Yeah.
We're just kind of in-house.
Yeah, and to be completely honest, I wouldn't be surprised if AIM does get discontinued, but they end up replacing it with something else. Maybe we'll end up with VIM or something.
Verizon Messenger or, yeah.
Yeah, I know you can pretty much take all your friends list from that, just move it over like Google's Messenger.
Yeah.
I assume anybody else that has a notable messaging service.
Yeah. Mm. Or you can just use Skype.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. So up next we got more science news. So everybody remembers back in 2011 there was the big earthquake and tsunami that happened in Japan. It was a big tragedy. Of course, it ended up with the Fukushima nuclear disaster. All this shit. Now we found out that after the 2011 tsunami, nearly 300 marine species have hitchhiked across the Pacific afterwards.
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy thing to see, but they managed to latch on to much of the debris that happened to be created during that stuff, as well as ships, buoys, crates, even some of that, the plastic island, piece of the plastic island that's out in the middle of the Pacific.
Yeah. I heard they even managed to find an old Soviet Union buoy that apparently washed up on the East Coast somewhere.
Basically had, tons of this sea life show up on in Hawaii as well as the west coast of North America and sort of has some really, really weird stuff happen just because of that tsunami. I find all this new life that just doesn't live in that part of the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just like basically nature deciding, all right, I'm out. See you.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's all these creatures catching the gnarliest waves.
Oh, yeah. Out. Yeah. Don't
it's like, fuck you, surfers.
Yeah. Don't tell DreamWorks or they'll turn it into an animated movie franchise.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, that would probably happen.
But anyway, some more science news. Madagascar is having an outbreak of the Black Death. That's going on right now.
Like bubonic?
The plague, yes.
Yeah. They've had about 30 deaths since late August, and about another 162 cases show up, which has caused a bunch of people in that country to buy masks.
Yeah.
To try to prevent further contamination.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you think some of those old world kind of diseases and plagues and such are completely gone.
No, they have a tendency to come back every few decades or so. The good thing, though, is that medical science has proceeded to the point now that we can easily quarantine and prevent stuff like this. So,
and I guess between 2010 and 2015, Madagascar accounted for about 82% of deaths from the plague worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
So about 584 deaths during that time frame, 476 were in Madagascar. So it seems like this country just has a big problem with this.
Yeah. It's been suggested that before that the bubonic plague, the Black Death apparently originated in and around that area, and that it managed to make its way up to, I think it was China, and then it managed to travel along the Silk Road into Europe. So,
yeah.
But, yeah. So, yeah, stuff like, the Black Death, polio, scarlet fever, all this stuff isn't completely gone. It manages to find its way back every few decades or so. All right, so next up in 2017 problems. There was a high school in Baltimore that started to notice this hazardous odor that was going throughout the school, and so they actually had to evacuate it. And then they found out what it was. It was an air freshener that was flavored, as it were, with pumpkin spice.
Yeah, that must have been really, really nasty air freshener.
Yeah, yep. They had 4 people go to the hospital as a result, 2 adults, 2 children.
Yeah.
I guess they must have had some sort of allergic reaction to it.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Yeah. See, a lot of people don't realize this. Some people are actually allergic to pumpkin spice.
Yeah.
And
getting that into like the air circulation system.
Mm-hmm.
Not really doing too well.
No. Doesn't seem like a great idea either.
Yeah. And I guess there was 1 other person that went to the hospital at the same time, but not for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a weird thing to include in those numbers.
Yeah.
Like 5 people went to the hospital. 1 had nothing to do with this. 1
was completely unrelated.
Yeah. Frankly, I think the whole pumpkin spice thing is bullshit. Just for the record. Like, as far as I'm concerned, if you want to taste pumpkin, just get a fucking pumpkin.
Yeah.
You know?
They're in season now. I mean, jeez.
They're in season, you know? Take it home. Make it into a soup, fried up on a fire. Make some pumpkin pie. It's delicious.
That's the only way you need to enjoy pumpkin.
Yeah.
Make it a pie and it's perfect.
Yeah. Ask them, for instance, Europe. They use it in stews all the time.
Yeah.
Go ahead. But, again, fuck. I'm not sure if that's something you blame on millennials or just...
I think it's
fucking,
on
fucking
people
white
that,
people in general.
I think it's people that gets into the holiday season.
Yeah, I can understand
that.
A little too much, and I can understand that. But again, if you want a pumpkin, get a fucking pumpkin.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be particularly big. They come in small sizes. It doesn't cost you that much. Come on.
Yeah. It's like
a farmer's market, for God's sake.
They get really into like Halloween and just dress up a bunch leading up to it. And it's like, no, just you got one day for this.
Yeah.
That's all you get. Every other day you do it, you're going to call the cops on you.
Yeah.
Because you're not supposed to be around children.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So stupid people doing stupid shit. But now in something that's really good. We are now getting the season 3 premiere of Mr. Robot on Wednesday.
Yes.
Democracy is coming to the USA.
This show could not have been more timely.
Yeah. Yeah, for those of you who don't know, that's a Leonard Cohen song. Mm. For those of you who are curious. Mm. Once again, he's going to show up and he's going to cause terrible shit for the capitalist order.
Yep.
You know, I'm amazed that this show, as like subversive and edgy as it is on cable television.
Yeah.
And like with
especially
a very big budget
USA.
Too. Yeah, the yeah. USA network.
Like the network of Suits.
Yeah.
It's like they have Mr. Robot.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if you guys have watched both seasons of the show yet, but yeah, if you haven't, it might be a good time to catch up.
Yeah.
Because, wow, that second season goes places you don't expect it to.
Yep. But anyway, so moving on. So as everybody knows, last week, Hugh Hefner died at the age of 91. And, of course, they've been working on a biopic for him that's being directed by Brett Ratner, and now we know who's going to be playing him. Hmm. It's Jared Leto.
Okay, I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure either. all I'm thinking is, God help whoever it is that has to be on the set with him while they're making that movie, because... If the shit he pulled while they were making Suicide Squad is any indication, oh God.
yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, I would expect to find a lot of used condoms everywhere. Just
yeah, there's very much quotes here about him wanting to, what's it say here? This is from Brett Ratner who's directing it. He said, Jared is an old friend. When he heard I got the rights to have story, he told me, I want to play him. I want to understand him. And I really believe Jared can do it. He's one of the great actors of today.
Yeah, that's your cue to flee. When he says, I want to get... If he says anything remotely, I want to get inside this character's head, that means you need to quarantine him in a concrete vessel somewhere out in a desert, far away from human civilization. Because... He is going to pull some serious shit while he's out there.
Yeah, I guess initially this biopic was in the works in 2007.
Yeah.
Universal and Imagine Entertainment working on it with Robert Downey Jr. Attached to play Hef. The rights to that movie expired in 2015, I think.
Yeah.
Purchased by Jerry Weintraub of Ocean's 11 and Westworld. He died in 2015. Ratner snapped him up, and yeah, he's very much interested in doing this the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there was a story about he wanted to get Leto to the Playboy Mansion to talk to Hefner and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But this was... in the past year, so he was not in great health. So I didn't really get to meet him, but luckily for him, there's tons of footage out there of Hugh Hefner.
Oh, yeah.
Should be tons of plenty footage. Of material
tons
for him.
Of footage, videos, interviews. He was like the cameo king for a long time. Trust me, his mannerisms and his whole style, there's plenty of material to go on.
Yeah.
Yeah, the smutty Stan Lee.
Yeah. Next up, we recently found out that Fox is working on a Bob's Burgers movie that is set for a July 2020 release.
Wow. 2020?
Yeah.
That's far away.
Yeah, it's a couple years.
Yeah, it's yeah. Sounds about right for an animated movie.
Yeah. I wonder how they're going to go about that, because I'm trying to imagine what like a movie plot for Bob's Burgers would be. Because
guess just like a regular episode, but just longer.
See, I don't know if people could stand that. Because part of the charm of Bob's Burgers is that it's kind of compact and it's plot. So.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, they won the Emmy for Best Animated Series this year.
Yeah.
So they've certainly taken advantage of the continued popularity of the show.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy that's been.
But whatever.
It's kind of crazy that's been going on for 7 seasons.
Yeah, it has.
Number 8 starts, I guess it just started on the 1st.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And much like Family Guy, it almost died. Like.
Yeah. Well, that's typical for Lauren Bouchard's shows.
Mm-hmm.
But he had one that fell out at Adult Swim. Obviously, Home Movies was sort of on death's door for each of its 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he finally got one that took off.
Yeah, Archer. Mm. Well, that and Bob's Burgers. Yeah.
Yeah.
So finally, last story for the night. We finally got the first trailer for Pacific Rim Uprising.
Mm. Okay, take my money.
Yeah. I can do this now.
Yep. You know it's going to be stupid. You know it's going to be dumb. It's going to have big mechs and giant monsters. I see no issue with any of this.
Yeah.
It seems like it's got a very King of the Monsters kind of vibe of these mechs teaming up to take on teams of monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the last one was kind of one-on-one matchups, kind of.
Yeah.
That was kind of a little bit weird, but this was kind of like, yeah, fuck it. They're all fighting in this city.
Yeah, but is Del Toro directing again?
No. He's, I think, executive producing it.
All right.
Yeah. But, yeah, he had to pass it off to somebody else.
Yeah, he's got directed his other...
by Steven DeKnight.
All right.
Daredevil.
Yeah.
For Netflix.
Oh, well then.
Perfectly fine.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, he had, because I forgot, Del Toro's got his other major project that's coming out this December. It's The Shape of Water.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one's been getting a lot of buzz. I've been told it's apparently really good, but...
Yeah.
But, so I do believe we have a show, folks.
As compact as it is, we got one.
Yeah, and sort of at... kind of last minute, too, because unfortunately, like I said, I kind of zonked out for a while and completely lost track of time. But anyway.
Yeah, we made it work.
Yeah, we made it work. So anyway, so I would like to remind our listeners, if you have something you would like to ask us, have a question, a comment, something you'd like to have us read on the air, or just have a suggestion for the show, you can contact us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can find our little cast at Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, and pretty much everywhere else that fine little podcasts like ours are sold. Well, I was going to say sold, but...
Downloaded.
Downloaded, yeah. There we go. Yeah. Yeah, if we tried to sell this thing, we wouldn't make a goddamn penny. But anyway, so with that, I have been your host for the most, Brandon Perkins. And for Filippo D'Onofrio and Chris Logia, I'd like to say good night. Get some sleep out there. I really need to stick to the clock more.